Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The inner game is the relationship we have with our authentic purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game exerts a creative impact because our quantum world shifts to reflect our thoughts and feelings. Each of our contributions shapes the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. So these are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth and how that strengthens their organizations and offerings to make a bigger difference. Today, instead of speaking with a guest, I want to take this opportunity to welcome and release us into 2020 with a couple of gifts. The first is one I have been rumbling with and learning from for decades of my life. It's something we don't often think of as a gift. In fact, Brené Brown, the renowned researcher, storyteller, says that next to shame, grief is what we fear most. But grief also restores us to wholeness. So I'll share some insights into grief and its role. And in the second part of the show, I'll share a story that also restores wholeness and provides a heart-opening vision that I find filled with deep purpose and partnership, really designed for this profound time we find ourselves in on the planet. So welcome to 2020. And maybe you feel this too, or have over the last weeks, even in this time of celebration and family and so many of the sweetnesses of life. In the background is often a lurking anxiety and vulnerability in the face of dire climate reports and job losses and healthcare crises, and you name it. We find ourselves in an ongoing grief process that maybe we haven't even recognized as a grief process. Anxiety, depression, denial, anger, surrender. These are all classic grief responses. So what do we do with grief in our culture? We have a story that too much is unhealthy, when what is really true, that it's a practice that restores our resilience and creativity and our ability to feel more depth of emotion and therefore more compassion and connection to others, things we desperately need right now in order to contribute in the face of our challenges. When we pathologize grief or fear it, we cut ourselves off from a healthy and authentic way of engaging fully with life. I lost my dad to cancer when I was 15. And other than the two-hour memorial service, I had no support in my grief. So like most of us, I did whatever I had to just to get on with life. And I'm really touched by Greta Thunberg, the young climate activist. I watched one of her speeches to the UN Assembly, and I was really moved by her public display of grief, with her lips trembling and her voice catching in front of all of these leaders in the world, sharing how she felt about all that is currently being lost on the planet due to climate impacts. And when we share our grief, it doesn't shut others down. It connects us more deeply to those things we care about. It connects us to our feelings, and not in a way that makes us go off the deep end. You know, really more on the contrary, those feelings really spur our greatest courage and the contributions we make because of that courage. And I think Greta is also such a model of that. She has spoken about her ability to feel deeply and be moved by her emotions with great focus. And she has shown that movements are made, are moved by that depth of feeling, the alignment, you know, like you experience with anyone who's speaking from that place of deep alignment with deep purpose. The Martin Luther Kings, the people that you know in your life that exhibit that. So I think it's so important for us right now to begin to reclaim this experience and witnessing and practice and discharge of grief in our lives, and trust that, you know, that what the research shows and what our experience is, that it actually is something we deeply need. It's not something to be shunned, to be shortchanged, to be judged, to be sped up, but to allow in. Francis Weller is what you might call a grief specialist. He talks about what the two things that are absolutely necessary to move grief, to move through that process in so that it does its job of restoring wholeness. And those two things are containment and discharge. And in our culture, we're often asked to do both of those jobs, which is impossible. We can only do one of them at a time. And so we become these overfilled containers of grief. And until we share with others on a regular basis and allow our feelings and what we're going through to be witnessed, then we can access some discharge. And rather than being afraid that we don't know what to say to someone else who's experiencing grief, I think this is something that, you know, that keeps us from this practice, is we have not been supported to understand how to work with it. And, you know, as you know, many of us find just through experience that just being a witness, just allowing someone to have their process and know that they don't need to do it any kind of different way and we will be there for them, that is the powerful and simple way we can help each other through. And just bringing this conversation, not keeping our emotions from our professional lives, from our civic lives, but being inspired by and being instructed by those people like Greta and, you know, the any number of amazing leaders that we've been able to experience, Martin Luther King and Gandhi, that public displays of grief and deep, deep speaking and experiencing from emotion around the things that we care most deeply about are where we'll find the guidance to move forward through these processes at this time, through any number of challenges that we face. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, no mud, no lotus. We have to get down in the muck in order to attain the beauty of the flower. Spiritual practice may make our lives better, but it's because we get better at engaging our life, not because it takes us around the parts of life we don't like. And I love that simple reminder of no mud, no lotus. Where, as some of you may have heard, my last interview with Calla Rose Ostrander, where we talked about being able to sit in the mess of what is going on right now on the planet, and in a way that allows us enough presence and enough presence of mind and enough slowing down and connecting to each other to actually be able to figure out the way through. I think that, and I've heard others say, which I love, that grief is a yes to life. It's a declaration of love for the world. It's a recognition of our bond with nature and with life. You know, we, as human beings, we have not just the will to live, but the will to evolve. And if grief is something that allows us the wholeness to move through that evolutionary process, then it's something that's worth giving our attention to and listening and feeling deeply into. So I will stop here for a moment and just say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today, I've been sharing some insights into the evolutionary role of grief in our lives during this specific time on the planet. And part of the process of moving with grief is acceptance of the truth of what is so. And in that acceptance, we often find a cairn or a beacon calling us forward. And this story has been, the one that I'm about to share with you, has been one of those beacons for me. It's a way to both accept the confronting reality we face, but from a place of empowerment and agency. And it's a story shared by Charles Eisenstein, the author of many really incredible contemporary thoughts into our challenges right now and the way we can navigate through them and access the evolutionary opportunity of it all. And this book is from, this story is from his book, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. Sorry, just had to take a little drink there. It's called A Gathering of the Tribe. Once upon a time, a great tribe of people lived in a world far away from ours. Whether far away in space or in time, or even outside of time, we do not know. They lived in a state of enchantment and joy that few of us today dare to believe could exist, except in those exceptional peak experiences when we glimpse the true potential of life and mind. One day, the elders of the tribe called a meeting. They gathered around, and one of them spoke very solemnly. "My friends," she said, "there is a world that needs our help. It is called Earth, and its fate hangs in the balance. Its humans have reached a critical point in their collective birthing, the same point our own planet was at 1 million years ago, and they will be stillborn without our help. Who would like to volunteer for a mission to this time and place and render service to humanity?" "Tell us more about this mission," they asked. "It's no small thing. Our shaman will put you into a deep, deep trance so complete that you will forget who you are. You will live a human life, and in the beginning, you will completely forget your origins. You will forget even our language and your own true name. You will be separated from the wonder and beauty of our world and from the love that bathes us all. You will miss it deeply, yet you will be unable to name what you are missing. You will remember the love and beauty that we know to be normal only as a longing in your heart. Your memory will take the form of an intuitive knowledge as you plunge into the painfully marred earth, and you will remember that a more beautiful world is possible. As you grow up in that world, your knowledge will be under constant assault. You will be told in a million ways that a world of destruction, violence, drudgery, anxiety, and degradation is normal. You may go through a time when you are completely alone, with no allies to affirm your knowledge of a more beautiful world. You may plunge into a depth of despair that we in our world of light cannot imagine. But no matter what, a spark of knowledge will never leave you. A memory of your true origin will be encoded in your DNA. That spark will lie within you, inextinguishable until one day it is awakened. You see, even though you will feel for a time utterly alone, you will not be alone. We will send you assistance, help that you will experience as miraculous, experiences that you will describe as transcendent. These will fan that spark into a flame. And for a few moments or hours or days, you will reawaken to the beauty and the joy that is meant to be. You will see it on Earth, for even though the planet and its people are deeply wounded, there is a beauty there still, projected from past and future on to the present as a promise of what is possible and a reminder of what is real. After that glimpse, the flame may die down into an ember again as the routines of normal life there swallow you up. But after each awakening, they will seem less normal, and the story of that world will seem less real. The ember will glow brighter. When enough embers do that, they will burst into flame together and sustain each other. But remember, you will not be there alone. As you begin to awaken to your mission, you will meet others of our tribe. You will recognize them by your common purpose, values, and intuitions, and by the similarity of the paths you have walked. As the condition of the planet Earth reaches crisis proportions, your paths will cross more and more. The time of loneliness, the time of thinking you might be crazy, will be over. You will find the people of your tribe all over the Earth and become aware of them through the long-distance communication technologies used on that planet. But the real shift, the real quickening, will happen in face-to-face gatherings in special places. When many of you gather together, you will launch a new stage on your journey, a journey that, I assure you, will end where it begins right now. Then the mission that lay unconscious within you will flower into consciousness. Your intuitive rebellion against the world presented to you as normal will become an explicit quest to create a more beautiful one. So just to break for a moment and pause, if you just joined us, I'm reading a story from the book, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible by Charles Eisenstein. And it's sort of a parable for our times. A woman said, "Tell us more about the time of loneliness that we might prepare for it." The elder said, "In the time of loneliness, you will always be seeking to reassure yourself that you are not crazy. You will do that by telling people all about what is wrong with the world, and you will feel a sense of betrayal when they don't listen to you. You might hunger for stories of wrongness, atrocity, and ecological destruction, all of which confirm the validity of your intuition that a more beautiful world exists. But after you have fully received the help we will send you and the quickening of your gatherings, you will no longer need to do that, because you will know your energy will thereafter turn toward actively creating the more beautiful world." A tribeswoman asked, "How do you know this will work? Are you sure our shaman's powers are great enough to send us on such a journey?" The elder replied, "I know it will work because he has done it many times before. Many have already been sent to Earth to live human lives and to lay the groundwork for the mission you will undertake now. He's been practicing. The only difference now is that many of you will venture there at once. What is new in the time you will live in is that you will gather in critical mass and each awaken the other to your mission. The heat you will generate will kindle the same spark that lies in every human being, for in truth, each one is from a tribe like ours. The whole galaxy and beyond is converging on Earth, and never before has a planet journeyed so far into separation and made it back again. Those of you who will go will be part of a new step in cosmic evolution. A tribeswoman asked, is there a danger we will become lost in that world and never wake up from the shamanic trance? Is there a danger that the despair, the cynicism, the pain of separation will be so great that it will extinguish the spark of hope, the spark of our true selves and origin, and that we will be separated from our beloved ones forever? The elder replied, that is impossible. The more deeply you get lost, the more powerful the help we will send you. You might experience it at the time as a collapse of your personal world, the loss of everything important to you. Later, you will recognize the gift within it. We will never abandon you. Another man asked, is it possible that our mission will fail and that this planet, Earth, will perish? The elder replied, I will answer your question with a paradox. It is impossible that your mission will fail, yet its success hangs on your own actions. The fate of the world is in your hands. The key to this paradox lies within you, in the feeling you carry that each of your actions, even your personal secret struggles, has cosmic significance. You will know then, as you know now, that everything you do matters. There were no more questions. The volunteers gathered in the circle, and the shaman went to each one. The last thing each was aware of was the shaman blowing smoke in his or her face. They entered a deep trance and dreamed themselves into the world where we find ourselves today. Take a breath. I mean, it's just lovely every time I reconnect with that story, because there's so much in it that I recognize as, you know, the beauty of what we are experiencing right now, the critical mass that we feel, you know. And I know a lot of listeners of this station have experiences, you know, the collective beautiful experiences of music and live music and festivals that have become these sort of evolutionary gatherings. It's more about just the music. It's about the artistic expression that's kind of giving birth to this deeper, more courageous, more compassionate, more expressive humanity. And the pieces of, you know, the loneliness that we feel when we aren't connecting to each other and aren't being in those places doing work together to serve. And so it's those kinds of experiences where we can give ourselves to. We can participate and trust that we will find each other and we will be emboldened to take whatever's next on. And so I just leave you with that and encourage you to explore Charles Eisenstein's work. It's tremendously supportive. So thank you for listening today. If you have a question for me, please join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. The page acts as a forum to continue these conversations, and you can find out where to listen to past shows there as well, or on the KDNK website. And until next time, let your resilient, creative heart lead the way in 2020.